This podcast is brought to you by Wealth Within, a global leader in stock market education. For more information on our courses, head over to wealthwithin.com.au. Please note that the information in this podcast should not be considered personal financial advice. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Talking Wealth Podcast. You're on with Phil and Pedro, and today we're asking the question, could China finally be the catalyst that pops the AI bubble? Over the past few weeks, there have been some major developments in the AI and semiconductor space that investors need to be aware of. While the AI revolution has created some of the biggest winners in financial markets, China is starting to challenge some of the assumptions that have driven that incredible rally. So today we're going to unpack what's happening with China's semiconductor ambitions and the rise of new AI models that are challenging US dominance, and what this could mean for some of the biggest companies in the world, including Nvidia, TSMC, and the broader technology sector. So as always, we'll share our thoughts, discuss these trends and where they're heading, and look at what investors should be watching as the AI race continues to evolve. So before we get into it, Phil, how are you going?
Good, mate. Very good. It's always nice to touch base with what is going on with AI, given it is such an evolving space, and right now it's falling. So I know there's probably a lot of jitters out there because a lot of the market a lot of investors are in those names that you said, Nvidia, TSMC, and a lot of the tech space. That's literally where the flow of money's gone over the last couple of years. So this will be very interesting, and maybe also interesting for those Bitcoin holders, because I know a lot of the Bitcoin's latest demise, if you will, or fall, normally Bitcoin around these times has been picked up, after dips by the dip and all that kind of stuff. But what we have seen is, even from the big end of town, institutional flow dive into things like SpaceX and prepare itself or allocate takeaway capital from crypto and start allocating it in these new ventures related to AI. Mm. So it'll be interesting to see if that scenario changes again with what you're about to show us.
Yeah, definitely interesting dynamic there. And as most people would know, Bitcoin is a risk-on asset, and so are technology stocks. So if they start to suffer, obviously interest rates and all of that is a different topic altogether. We're not going to really get into that, but just cover some of the major stories that have come out. And I think that this is one that we should definitely take note of, and that is that China has had a chip-making breakthrough, apparently, right? So this is coming from Reuters. There's multiple articles on this, but the one I'm going to cite is from Reuters, that China is starting production on a homegrown immersion DUV chip-making tool. Now, for those that don't understand what a DUV, it's a it's a deep ultra, not a DUI, no, driving under the influence. that's mostly in Australia that we have those. They're doing a DUV, which is much more productive. It's a deep ultraviolet lithography machine. So basically, these are machines that are typically made, DUV machines made. I'm just going to make sure that we've got these Netherlands. That's right. So I thought that it was in the Netherlands. Usually they come out from a company there, and America has put a trade ban to ban these machines getting sold into China. And these are the machines that make the semiconductors. And, Taiwan has the majority of them. I know in Korea, Samsung has some. And they use these little lasers. I've seen some examples of how they work. It's basically, if you imagine a dot and then you put it in a box, and then you shake that around, and then the dot is going around everywhere, and you're trying to hit that dot with a laser. That's basically what they're doing. And it's like, it does it with such precision. And that's how they can get those really miniature inscriptions into the semiconductors to make them much, much more powerful in a smaller form. That's basically how they work. Mm-hmm. So they're very high end machines, very expensive. They've been barred, to be sold to China. China hasn't had them. That's why they haven't been able to create semiconductors or chips or things like that, the high-end ones anyway. But now it looks like a company, and they haven't disclosed which company it is yet. So it's just a source saying that they're about to release one. And I did hear that, you know, from one source that roughly the machines are planned to produce about 5 this year, and then roughly 20 in 2027. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be 5 released this year, 20 in 2027. Now, this is obviously shaking the market a little bit because, I mean, this whole AI story has been built on one, basically TSMC company owning the majority of the share in the semiconductor space, NVIDIA as well, on top of that, Micron. You know, they're the ones that create the plan, and then TSMC makes those chips. Now, if China comes out, and as China does, they create things for cheaper and at higher volumes. If that's the case, then TSMC could lose their market share. NVIDIA could lose their market share. You know, same with the other big semiconductor companies.
Yeah, it's always a thing. Like, whenever a company has a moat or has dominance, when that competitor comes up, and like you said, if that competitor is China, like we saw it with DeepSeek not long ago when, you know, the US brought out the AI and DeepSeek thought, well, let me have a go at this, and basically destroyed it in terms of cost. Now, the model wasn't as good, to some were saying, but nevertheless, I mean, you know, China, look what they're doing with the car manufacturing space. I mean, they are destroying Europeans in terms of, you know, what they can produce at the cost and what the
and Japanese.
And Japanese too. Yeah, Toyota. Like, I mean, Toyota's they're openly saying we're in big trouble. So is Audi. So is a lot of car companies. But it's not about car companies. It's about China, like you said. And you're right, mate. You know, you get a competitor come through, a destabilizing competitor. Those stocks that you said, NVIDIA, TSMC, and I think, be careful.
Yep, for sure. You know, you talk about DeepSeek. We're going to be talking about a different AI model after this for the second segment, because that's another precipice that could affect this AI bubble. But, you know, just keeping on this.
I hope you're not talking about the big S word that Anthropic have come out and started talking about. The singularity is here.
All right, finally. I know that there's been different predictions about singularity, and
that's what they're saying. Sam Altman the other day, I read, was saying, you know, singularity has been achieved, which is pretty crazy.
Until we have chips in our brains, I don't think that's quite there. But
it's a bit scary. To be honest, I've seen enough Matrix and Terminator movies to know how this ends, and it's not good.
Yeah. Now, one caveat that I would say for this whole China story, right? So they can create the machines to actually manufacture the semiconductors, much like TSMC, but they lack the ability to actually design them, because usually the designs come from IBM, all American designs. Americans are really good at designing the chips. That's where their moat is. So what they basically do is, you know, that with these like little microscopic microscopes, they design all of this circuitry, and then they send that to TSMC, and then they manufacture it. So even if China can create these machines, America could just say, yeah, well, good on you guys, but we're just not going to give you the plans. We're not going to give you the design.
But for how long?
Yep.
You know, yep. If you go throughout history, they've always been able to get it done, China, one way or the other. So,
yep.
For how long?
Yeah. It's just like, you know, going back to cars, like Elon Musk was so excited about opening up a car manufacturing plant in China. Remember that Tesla, he opened up a huge, suddenly all these Chinese EVs started coming out that were eerily similar to the Teslas.
Yeah, funny that, you know.
And that's been the way with
a lot of things. You know, the world gave China manufacturing, and not only it benefited, you know, a lot of companies, obviously, because of the cost of labor, higher profits, but at the same time, they gave away a ton of IP. And that's the trade-off. So, but this scenario is, like you said, is a little bit different, because they're not, by all report, and I don't know what you've uncovered, but for now it seems like, you know, they'll get the machines, but not necessarily have the blueprint.
The blueprint, exactly, the IP. But even still, all of this is already starting to crack the story about the semiconductors. And even if it doesn't come into play straight away, it plays on people's sentiment. And as you and I know, the market runs on sentiment, really. You could have a story that is not quite there yet the valuations are 100 times. Or you could have something that is completely over... undervalued, but people aren't aware of it yet. So we can definitely start to see the sentiment turning. And I think that this has put a bit of a dampening on that anyway. So, you know, talking about that sentiment, this is going on to part two. This is another thing that has dampened sentiment. And this is another DeepSeek moment, like you mentioned earlier, but this one is in the form of Kimi AI. So Kimi AI, it's from a company called Moonshot AI, released the latest model called Kimi K3. According to Tom's Hardware, so that's the website that we're citing here, the significance is not only the size of the model, it's that China is showing that it can produce highly competitive AI systems despite having less access to the world's most advanced chips. So even though they don't have the AI chips and they are developing the hardware to do it, they're still being able to meet or even beat those benchmarks. I mean, this one, they're talking about it beat Claude Fable 5 in front-end code arena benchmark. Now, I'm not sure the details of what this front-end code arena is, but all I need to understand is that it's beating Claude Fable 5, and Claude is a very powerful AI model. Now, for them to be doing this without the top access to hardware, they're going to learn some valuable lessons from this. And when they do have the hardware that they require, is that going to multiply them even more?
Yeah, well, I went and did some research. Front end code arena, what it is, for people that do want to know, it's a benchmark that measures how good AI models are at building real websites and web applications rather than answering coding questions or writing isolated functions. So instead of asking a model something like write a sorting algorithm, it gives prompts like build a responsive dashboard with charts, dark modes, toggle, login pages, and animation. So pretty detailed is what they're beating it at. And like you said, mate, supposedly without the tools that the West has, being able to continuously produce, and I don't know so much about, you know, what they have and what they don't have. Because you've got to remember, we're talking about China here. We never know the full story of what they have and what they don't have. Nobody but China knows. And that's also playing into, I think, these jitters now, these fears around, okay, what do they have? How close are they? Because Jensen Huang has openly come out and said, you know, we should be concerned. Like, he's been asked before about China's as a competitor, and he said, yes, we should be concerned. We are in front right now, but it won't last. At some point, they will catch up.
Yeah, and that's why he wanted to push so much to push NVIDIA chips in there, so then at least the US owns the coding and the infrastructure that they're building it on. But he got pushed back at the beginning, and then they gave him the go-ahead, okay, well, now you can sell. And then China turned around and said, nah, we know your game now. We're all right.
We'll do it ourselves. Yeah.
And I've even heard of some companies in China going to, you know, across the sea to Singapore or Malaysia or something, training a model there where it's not, on the NVIDIA chips, where they're not banned, and then putting it on a hard disk and sending it back to China.
I think it's not going to be as hard as, you know, it may seem to get what they need to get. I doubt it.
There's a market for everything, basically.
Right.
So I mean, that's
Chinese,
the second
version of Tom Cruise special agent undercover.
Yeah, undercover smuggling hard drives.
Mission Impossible style.
Hey, podcasters, you're here for a reason: to become a more confident and profitable trader. And you can achieve this because it's all about having the right knowledge. We have a course that will suit you and improve the profits you take from the market. Curious to learn more? Head over to Wealth Within and check out our trading courses.
So that, I guess that ties into now the third part, third final part before we get into the stocks, which is the AI spending boom. So all of this is tied in together. Most people may not know, but Google and Meta and all of these big companies are now in reporting season, and they've released a lot of capital expenditure on AI, and it's actually caused their cash flows to go negative for the first time, and which is causing a little bit of a concern. So if you've got these big behemoths spending billions of dollars, and I've got the numbers here. I actually looked up the numbers of how much AI spending is. So tech AI spending may approach $700 billion this year. $700 billion. If they're investing all of this money, and that's according to CNBC, by the way. If they're investing all this money, and then suddenly China comes out and says, well, you can have this AI model, it's open source, nothing. It can do most of the things. You don't need all these front end, frontier models to do all of the basic tasks that you need to do, like reply to emails or summarize things or whatever. We can offer you this for a fraction of the price. Plus, we're doing our own hardware and all that. Far out. I mean, this AI spending could actually take the rug off from underneath them.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And that's always been the concern, because the bigger you go, the more you advance with the AI, the more it requires in terms of infrastructure, in terms of spend. So it's like this ever growing spending machine. And at some point the other side of that coin begins to diminish. At what point the gains diminish spend? At what point does spend make it not viable relative to what's going to come in? I don't know exactly, but the amount of spend going on is huge, like unprecedented. And we're talking about technology. We're not talking about spend in like something, for example, let's say we found a cancer vaccine. And we pour ridiculous amounts of money in the facilitation of that vaccine throughout the world, or whatever, some kind of treatment. There's an end result to that. This is technology. Like you said, tomorrow something can change. Quantum can come in. Something can change that renders all of this spend obsolete, or that just renders the technology obsolete, or the hardware obsolete. So I get it. The demand is still there right now. And I think the big question, or the big thing for any investor, is just consistently keep an eye on demand, keep an eye on demand, keep an eye on where it's all moving, because that's going to give you the confidence to continue to invest in something like this. Because if we've outstripped demand, and think about where it's going in terms of, is this going to be a retail tool? Is it going to be an institutional tool? What sectors of the economy will have it for growth? These are all the questions beyond 10 years, beyond 20 years. These are all the questions I'd be asking.
Yeah, and I think it's more dangerous than ever. I've heard of technology being compared to that hockey stick effect. So if you imagine a hockey stick, it's very flat, and then it starts to taper off, and then it goes very vertical. And I think that we're at that very vertical in terms of exponential kind of development, because if you think back to 2010, right, and you're a technology company and you're investing in a certain software, you can, with a high probability, degree of probability, you could assess what the next 5 years look like, right? People are still going to be using Excel, Microsoft, and things like that. So you can afford to put in all of the spending. People are still going to be using the internet. They're still going to be searching things and all that. So the spending justifies the means. But now, try to predict what the world is going to look like, or what technology is going to look like 5 years from now. You know, 5 years has become so much harder to predict now. And even somebody like Elon Musk, you know, he tries to predict things and he's gotten a few wrong already. At the forefront.
Yeah, let's not even get on his case. I saw him the other day coming out saying, oh, what are you saving for? You're not going to need money
in the
future.
Well.
And it's like, yeah, sure. Yeah. Coming from the guy that's got all the money, you know what, guys? You won't need it. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to take care of
the guy that could actually end poverty in some countries with how much money he has.
Yeah.
By just paying an extra 5% tax. That guy, nah, it's all right. Don't worry about it. So just keep spending. Keep spending on AI for me, please. You don't need to save your money. You won't need it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't believe in this whole basic income. I mean, I believe that it would be great if it could be implemented, but I don't believe that it's going to happen. There's no incentive here. What would they? They'd be just pretty much paying humans just to consume, because what else? Let's face it, governments support us, so then we can support the economy and support governments back. If we're not little productive units in the economy, then what are we?
And also people were like, oh, you know, it'll be amazing because, you know, you could chase your purpose or your passion. And I think that talks to such a small segment of humanity, because you've got the creatives who probably don't like their job if they're in a normal job. You often see it with a creative that says, oh, you know, my job's boring or whatever. But there's a large segment of people that are happy doing what they're doing. They find purpose in their current, whatever they do, whether they're a tradesman, whether they're, you know, a white collar, blue collar, it doesn't matter. They find purpose in what they're doing. And I think purpose is the biggest thing that keeps everything stable. If there is a basic, and we're going way off topic, but if we do get to a scenario like what Elon's saying, and AI can do everything for you and there's no need for money and you don't, well, humans without purpose, in my opinion, turn to the next option, which is, okay, vice.
Anarchy.
Right? What, if you've got nothing to do, what do most people do? Drink and take drugs.
Yeah.
His argument
is that AI will give you everything that you want. Anything that you desire, AI will give it to you. But who's going to be paying for that AI? It won't give me purpose.
That's what it won't give me. And if you're driven by purpose, then it doesn't give you everything you want.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very good argument, I think. Definitely. Because that's one of the things. I think it's one of those hierarchy of, I forgot the guy's name, but he was a philosopher and he was saying that that's one of the human hierarchies that you need to survive, and one of them is purpose. Every human needs to have a purpose.
Yeah. Part of the journey is struggle, is success, is highs and lows, is, you know, the reptilian side. You go out, you hunt, you have good days, you have bad days. And this system allows for that. People bag capitalism, but hey, man, never in history can you start from nothing and become something in this environment. Yeah. We've had more millionaires and billionaires than ever before. And yet people still bag the system and the environment. Oh, it's bad or it's not fair. Yeah, it can be corrupt. Okay, so what? But look at the good things about what it does.
Yeah. Yep.
Go try living communism agree. and see how happy you are. Or there's a reason why people run from that.
100%. And look, without getting too far off topic, you know, that's some good points. Let's get into some stocks. But before then, I just wanted to quickly highlight this recent report that came out from Goldman Sachs. This is very interesting. So in July 2026, a report from Goldman Sachs Analysts Matthew Ross and Tony Wu, so credit to them, they flagged 35 ASX-listed companies facing high risk of workforce reductions due to soaring labor costs, outgrowing sales, and companies increasingly leaning to automation and AI integration. So now this is coming back home now. This is coming to Australia. Now, some of the key ASX companies that they flagged, banking and finance, we've got NAB, Bendigo Bank, and Bank of Queensland. Now, we already knew this. We covered this a few times. We saw this on their reports. Retail and consumer, Coles, JB Hi-Fi, Treasury Wine Estates, Nick Scali, Endeavour Group, and Breville Group. Mm-hmm. Health and services, Cochlear, Sonic Healthcare, Ansell Limited. Tech and platforms, you got WiseTech Global, PEXA Group, Aussie Broadband. Now, WiseTech, as well, we've also covered WiseTech. There was a huge, I think there was thousands of jobs that were sold off already in WiseTech. And then just other industrials, we're talking about Generation Development Group, AUB Group, Electro Optic Systems, EOS, Brambles, Seek, Cleaner Waste Management. So you can find all these in the Australian Financial Review, you know, if you're looking for the article, but that's quite concerning. That's big ASX listed companies there, you know, potentially laying out big jobs.
Yeah, and it's funny, a lot of those ones you just mentioned, their share prices are rising coming into earnings season. So, and I remember, if you remember back in March, the previous earnings season that we had, February earnings. A lot of companies that got rewarded that saw share price appreciation was on the back of cost cutting through AI. Now, 12 months in, we're going to see, you know, really the full effect of that on a you know, full calendar year. And it's interesting to me that, like, in light of a lot of the economic conditions that say a lot of these discretionary stocks should be not performing, and some have, it's true to say, you know, like the Nick Scalis, like the Lovisas, like the Harvey Normans, the share prices have been down along with Treasury Wines, but in this last month, they've started to pick up.
Oh, Treasury Wines had a good rebound lately, actually. Yeah.
It's had a ripper rebound.
Surprisingly.
Yeah.
Mm.
And maybe we're going to find out during earnings or this full year earnings that the AI implementation has been amazing to the bottom line.
So that's the opposite side of this whole AI bubble thing. These would probably be the beneficiaries of it because they're the ones, while everybody else is fighting to be the majority player in the AI provider space, these are the consumers of AI, and they're reaping the benefits from lower cost due to competition.
I mean, lower cost also due to destroying the labor force, but getting rid of jobs. So
of course, it's
a bit of a catch 22.
There is that factor. I'm a believer that AI will create more jobs in the future. We just don't know what they are yet.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, there's that other side that, yeah, we have to go through the struggle before we get to the other side.
Mm. Yeah.
Hey, podcasters. Are you trading the share market but want to take your knowledge to another level? Dale's award-winning book, Accelerate Your Wealth, will get you there. Learn to master the stock market with trading strategies that will exceed your expectations. Secure your copy now by visiting the shop on the Wealth Within website.
Shall we have a look at some of these earlier stocks that we mentioned? Maybe Nvidia we'll start off with to see what's going on. A bit of a recap on... On Nvidia, yeah, and maybe we'll do Google and TSMC and the like.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've got Nvidia up now. If you want me to, I can have a look at it. It's down. It's down over the last since May. Nvidia has been down 20% as of yesterday. Is it the worst fall that Nvidia's seen over the last 4 or 5 years? No. In 2022, Nvidia fell 66%. In 2024, it fell 41% or 43%. And so in 2025, October, it fell 20%. So this is nowhere near, you know, the big falls that NVIDIA has seen. We're only, like I mentioned, since May, we're only down 19%. So what's interesting is that when I look at NVIDIA from a big picture gradient on you know, a monthly time frame, one thing that stands out to me is the moves up are getting shorter. And that sometimes is a precursor to a top. You look how strong from March 23 to November 24, the run was fantastic. I mean, the market ran up 1,000%. You look at the low from May 25 to the October 25 before the 20% correction, it went up 130%, so a tenth of that. And recently, before this sell-off, we only went up 40%. So we're almost halving in how strong we're rising and getting a bit heavier on the downside. And whilst I would say on the big picture, on the monthly, we're still in trend, what's going to decide for me, a break below, I guess, 170 or even 160 would then really, you've got to start to consider, mate, have we printed a top for NVIDIA before we see a deeper correction? But
Yeah, possibly down to that 140 mark where until it hits that earlier momentum, right, from when it started rising from 2023.
Yeah. Yeah, and it doesn't look like a hype stock at the moment. That's a positive. Like, I don't think we're in hype right now. It's really matured. So that is a positive, I think. But
yes.
But the high is getting smaller and halving in terms of that, and you're seeing a lot of compression around the highs. I'm not loving what's going on around these levels.
Yeah, I'm the same. And I think if it does break that momentum that it's established from that low of 2025, it's just touching it right now. Yep, and then it breaks that 160 like you mentioned, then 140 would probably be that next one. Now there's one that's very similar in a similar space. It's Micron Technology. This is one that got a lot of hype lately. So this is a hype stock, like you mentioned, that NVIDIA is not. Yeah. This one is the
epitome of
opposite
hype.
Of the epitome of hype. Yeah. But have a look at what's happened lately.
Yeah, and normal. I mean, very normal. You go up like this, expect to come down the same way. And you know, if for anyone listening, March 26th, the price was 332. April, May, June, in 4 months, it got to 1,250 in terms of the price for the high. To get from literally $10, or what was the low? $3, to get from around $3 to $300. So to move up 300 points, it took, 07 to 2026, you know, or over 20 years. And then in 4 months, it went quadrupled from 300 to 1200. So yeah, I think this is very normal, expected. But again, I think the big thing with these stocks, if you're someone who's buying and holding, man, you've got to have a really strong thesis on what your outlook is. Because like you said, for me, that would only be trading stocks, all of these. Like, I would have to trade these short to medium term, because no one knows what's coming in 5 years. They offer great volatility, great opportunity, but they reverse just as hard. So if you're going to be long-term in these, expect all your paper profits to be wiped at some point. I just don't think it's the right approach to be thinking or trying to project long-term. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Especially with all these developments coming out, it's moving really, really fast. So if you had that opportunity to get out at that top, then yeah, definitely I would have taken it for sure. The next one is TSMC, but it's listed in the US, ticker code TSM. Now, this one, it has also gone quite parabolic. They all seem to have taken off from the April low, April 2025 low. And that one from the low, it reached a high of 255%. But this is a very mature company. It's not like Micron that just came out and it was just a, you know, kind of like the next flavor in the whole mix. This one is actually just come back to trend. It hasn't fallen as much. So I think that this one is actually looking better than the rest, to be fair. The only thing that I would say is that if it does keep falling, like it has taken out that low of July 17th of July 2026, it has taken that out, which is not very good. I suspect that maybe that the next support is at around $315, say it's to $320. If it doesn't hold $320, well, the first thing would be to hold this momentum. If it doesn't hold this momentum that it's established since that low in April 2025, then we're going down to that $320. If we do break $320, then the next levels that I'd be looking for is around $250, and then all the way back down to around that $200. But I can't see it really falling that much. I think that TSMC is still a very critical company, and I can't see their market share being taken out anytime soon, even with that news of China.
I mean, for me, the big thing that stands out, just visually looking at price at the moment, and I know percentage terms, it's not as much as in previous as where prices was lower, but visually, this is the strongest down move in July 2026 that we have seen when you measure the volatility of things. Right?
Very sharp. Yeah.
And long. And
yeah, true.
And that is something to, yes, volatility has increased generally since April 2025, that is for sure. But even if you factor in the increased volatility from April 2025 on a monthly basis, this is still the longest move in 1 month, and it's pointing at the low. So it's not just, to me, it doesn't look like just selling. It's fast, and it's long. It's more than anything else since April. That's what has me a little bit concerned. If the pullback, if we do end up, I mean, we still got one day actually. Geez, the month might be over tomorrow for us. Yeah. So in 2 days, if this looks the way it looks now for July, opened at 460 and closing on the low at around 375, it better hold that momentum line, like you said, at 340. Because if it doesn't, even if it does, watch what the buyers do next. That's what I'll be thinking. Because after a move like that, if we get weak buying, that tells me that this is serious, and it looks serious right now. So, I'd be watching this one closely.
Yeah, yeah. That bar, that certain bar, and we do cover these types of bar reversal signals in our course, notably in module 5, where you can see those reversal signals happening. And that signal, what you were talking about, Phil, with that opening high and closing low, and just where it is in relation to the previous bar, yeah, that definitely looks like a pretty heavy reversal at the moment.
Yeah, and we'll find out soon, you know, what that means.
Yep, we sure will. Now, let's just cover one more, because we did touch on Google earlier.
Oh, yes.
So the good old Goog.
Google.
Good old Google. Let's see what's, it's Alphabet. So Alphabet Inc., a ticker code GOOGL.
Short term.
Because they came out. Short term, you reckon that there's a trading opportunity here?
Yeah, anything short term. Here, like this, the way it looks, big picture, for me, I'm keeping it safe and just going short term. That's all I'll say.
Right. It actually does look a little bit more mature than the rest. Like, it touched that momentum, and now it looks like it's reversing.
Because let's say we get a move up in August, and then we fail to take out the all-time high, and then we start moving back down again, that's going to create something in terms of what you know, and I don't know, you know what I'm talking about. That could be a serious market top. So, yeah, short term for me, this stock right now.
Short term up to 380.
Mate, it's gone from 120 to $400 in a year. Like, come on.
Yeah, for sure. All right, maybe just one more, because we've got to give everybody their money's worth. Microsoft, MSFT, because this is a one that also has been spending heavily. And I say this for a reason, because This is one that, yeah, exactly.
Well, that's what we were worried about before on the one previous. This is looking a lot more into that. Yeah.
If it breaks at 360, then it's that pattern that you're talking about.
Yeah, and that's not great.
That's not great. The fact that it didn't break up, it failed to break above that 460, and it's now struggling a little bit. If it breaks below that 360, then not looking very good. It's looking very toppy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot more volatile than the rest. So there you have it, guys. I mean, out of the stocks that we covered, it wasn't that many, but they're all in those space that we were talking about, and none of them are looking very good. There's definitely better opportunities elsewhere if you're wanting to look for trades. It doesn't matter that you love AI, you're using it every day. Don't fall in love with the story. Look at the price action. This is what we do, and you know, doesn't mean that you can't use it.
Yeah, look, you're in the market to profit, and it's one thing riding waves and riding you know, massive themes like AI has been, but you got to accept that regardless of the theme, regardless of the wave, there will be a beginning and there will be an ending. And just like the dot-com bubble, if you're in at the wrong time, you're going to get creamed. And so, yeah, I think tread with caution when you see, you know, vertical moves that have been going on for 5-6 years, because history says they don't last, regardless of what you may hear in the media and in the news. And there are so many opportunities out on the market, even like, and I'm not necessarily saying you have to go and look for beat up sectors or stocks. There are plenty, but when they're doing what Microsoft's doing right now, you'd want to be cautious more than not. And like SpaceX, I couldn't tell you how many people, like, we went out, put our, you know, on the line. I remember even talking to journalists and they were like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, it doesn't make sense. And we weren't the only one, or, you know, there were others that were saying it too, but there weren't that many. Everyone was like, oh, the best IPO in history. Oh, it's going to be amazing. You should have a slice for your kids of a space company. And it's like, for what? You're going to put a relic on your wall and go, look at me, I'm great, I own a piece of SpaceX. Mind you, you've lost the 20 grand that you've invested in it, because now it's trading well below the IPO price.
Yeah.
What are you doing this for? Like, and exactly. Then there'll be the people out there who say, oh, yeah, but I saw the other day Wall Street was saying, oh, you know, we're valuing SpaceX as an $800 company, and they measured the top big banks on Wall Street, and the range went from 800 to 130. So that tells you about the confidence in what
each
place thinks about SpaceX. But if you're good luck. If that's what you want to do, go for it, mate. You know, wait 20 years, but that's not what we're in this game for. We're in this game to capture the momentum, ride the opportunity, and walk away with a profit. That really, why else are you doing this?
Exactly right. Exactly. Well said. So in saying that, thank you everybody for listening. I hope that you got some good value out of that. We enjoyed bringing it to you, and we're looking forward to next week or the next podcast when we bring you some more topics for you to consider. So if you enjoyed it, please give us a 5-star review. Cheers, Phil.
Thank you, mate.
And we'll see you on the next one. Bye for now.
This podcast is brought to you by Wealth Within, a global leader in stock market education. For more information on our courses, head over to wealthwithin.com.au. Please note that the information in this podcast should not be considered personal financial advice.